Welcome to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
My name is Jill.
And my name is Michael.
Catch us every other Wednesday talking about books, publishing, indie bookstores, chatting with authors, and so much more.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Book It Pod for more Book It content.
Want to read something you heard about on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/BookItPod.
How are you doing, Jill?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. We didn't just talk for 20 minutes.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I just walked into the door and said hi to you.
Yes, exactly.
So, thanks for coming to Book It. As always, find us on Instagram, Twitter.
Oh, wow, wow, wow. There was a level of nothing in my head that I don't even know how to capture with words. Like, not a thing, space. Just
yes.
endless space.
Your brain went into sleep mode.
All right. So, anything new? What's exciting? What's going on at your house, your life?
Oh, gosh. Not a lot. By this time, I think I'll have a new niece. We record so wild. Right. So, everyone say congratulations.
Yay, new baby.
That hasn't happened yet, but it has happened.
I really like this space where we can both talk about things as yes. if they have happened and also they have not happened.
Correct. I mean, like, this is like the sexy behind the scenes stuff of podcasts is that, like, by the time we record this, like, anything in the world could have happened and we won't have covered it.
That's true. I got a good one, though, for Tell you, me. Kind of tying in with, like, you know, missing out, but not really. Yeah. So, Quentin, my little one, says to me, the other day, what do you do at middle school for recess? Like, where is their playground? So we were up at the middle school for something for the big kids. And I said, oh, they don't have a playground. You don't have recess in middle school. So they have gym class. And then they're allowed to eat lunch outdoors. And sometimes their classes go outside. They have really nice landscaped areas with benches. So, and then you be on a sports team or in a club and you are outside then. But there's no, like, we eat lunch, we go to recess.
Right.
It was very, very, like, quiet and pensive about it. And then, like, checked in with me several times. Like, are you sure? Like, maybe it's out this door or maybe it's over there. And I'm like, no.
You got to be wrong.
I promise there's no middle school recess.
Sorry, buddy.
The rest of the evening goes by. He goes to bed. It's like midnight, and he is crying, full on sobs. Oh. And I was like, buddy, come here. Like, what's going on? Like, what's the problem? And he was like, I am having big feelings.
He said that?
Yeah, that's like a little phrase we use in our house. And I'm like, I can tell. Like,
yeah, that much I knew.
What is up? The child was sobbing. And I'm not kidding. It took me probably at least a half an hour to, like, talk him off the ledge because he loves recess. Recess is so fun. And he's in fourth grade. When he gets to seventh grade and he's at the middle school, he's not going to have recess. So, you know, he's upset about a thing that has not happened, but will happen 3 years in the future.
All of this checks out.
Yeah. And just feeling it so very, very deeply. And he is, like, motivated to address the situation. He was like, Mom, aren't you in charge of the middle school? And I was like,
come on, Mom.
No, I'm in charge of the PTO. Well, can't you get the other moms together to tell the principal that there has to be a playground? And I was like, I don't I don't think so. And I was like, trying to explain to her, I was like, well, you know, you will be a different person in 3 years than you are now. And you might feel differently and you'll enjoy like study hall and sports and the things that you get to have in middle school. And he's just like, absolutely not. That's definitely not going to happen. No. And we have to figure out this recess situation. And it just reminded me so much of what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
On today's episode, because this happened like maybe 3 weeks ago and it has come up once a week since.
Wow.
I mean, this is just a humongous concern for him. And he can't, it will not leave his mind.
He can't quit it.
And, you know, today's episode is characters we can't quit. And it's very much the same. It's just, there is something about making a connection with something or someone and not wanting to let it go. And it just seems like they pop up again and again in different situations. Does this happen for you in books?
Oh my gosh, yes. I think because all books have their own agenda, like what they're trying to do and what they're trying to do successfully, be it world building or plot driven stuff, whatever it is. But at the heart of all of them, if they don't have characters that feel real and thoughtful, it will be less successful. I think quality characters can make good books great books, and is a through line in what some of my favorite books are of all time, is having really strong characters.
Yeah. I think it happens most for me when either I don't agree with the standard interpretation of the character.
Yeah.
Or if I'm still trying to understand how they tick or how I feel about them.
I've learned a lot about being a reader from you, because I have really knee-jerk reactions to books I either loved or hated. But you are so good at sitting with a book for a while and just being okay with the fact that you don't know how you feel about it. And
yeah.
I've learned a lot from you in like reading experiences from that.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I don't. If I have made up my mind about a character or a book, or if I agree with kind of the just general feel about the book, I feel like it doesn't stick with me and it's not a thing. Mm. But there's something about the character where if I haven't figured them out or I have a really strong reaction.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. I come back. What do you think it is about characters?
That's so funny you say that, because and now I'm going to bring up a book. Well, I'll bring it up now because it's not in my list. But
yeah,
I was having that feeling too, where the books I ultimately chose to talk about later are characters that have stayed with me for very good reasons that have like helped develop me as a human being. But other characters that I can't quit that I didn't include were ones that like live in my mind in really complicated ways.
Yep.
For example, well, actually, I don't want to, I'll wait because I don't want it to be one of yours. And I don't know if it is one of yours, but there is a book that we read where the characters were complicated and a little bit problematic, and I can't get them out of my head. I cannot get them out of my head.
It might be the last book I have on my list.
Okay, okay.
I'm excited now.
I have a feeling it is. But yeah, no, that happens all the time. Like, and it's different than a character just being poorly written. There are certain characters where like, there's a book that I'm going to say it, we're going to bleep it because this is a very popular book, but I want Jill to know what I'm talking about. The main character in is horribly written. It's just not a good character, not like an intentionally bad character, just poorly written.
Yes. Yes. I think there's a distinction there.
Yes.
It's okay if I don't like the character.
Of course. Yes.
Sometimes, and that will stick with me because that's a great bad character.
Yes. 1,000%. Yes.
When they're written bad, you're like, oh, that is a bad character.
They're not real. Like the difference for me is like, regardless of how I feel about them personally, a well-written character is one where I stop feeling the hand of the author. It's when the character starts to live on the page as a real person to me.
Mm-hmm.
It shifts my perspective. It's no longer the author telling me about the character. It's the character telling the author what they should tell me about them. And that, for me, is the biggest difference between a poorly written character and a character that, whether or not I like them, is well-written.
Oh, that's fascinating.
There you go.
I forget. you might remember. I forget who which author said, this isn't an exact quote, something to the effect of, you know, the characters speak to them and they're kind of getting out the character story. And, you know, sometimes it's like, great, 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 great. This, like, and you have to kind of get it all out, even if it's parts that you're not going to use. Or like, who did we have that conversation with?
It might have been Monica West.
It might have been.
But it also might have been Robert Jones Jr.
Those are the two I was thinking in the back of my mind. I think it might have been Robert Jones Jr.
Yeah.
And he was saying, you know, he has whole backstories and narratives maybe for people who are minor in the book or could be a future book or aren't in the book. Was I at the podcast? I feel like I was there.
I don't know who's hosting anymore because I don't remember very well either.
maybe the listeners can clue us in. Yeah, but they've got this quality where you can tell, you can feel like they are a real person.
Yes, yes. That is the difference. When they are, when I can feel like that they are existing in the world that is created for them, I actually forget about caring whether or not I like them necessarily because I just appreciate how thoughtfully three-dimensional they are.
You really don't care if you like the character or not?
I'm saying like in terms of like I can separate between like if I like a character or not versus if it even feels like a character at all.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Does it?
No, I super care if I don't like them.
That's the part I want to know about. Like, it bugs me when I don't like the character. But not in a way that I'm like, oh, I don't like this book. Like, this book isn't for me.
Yeah.
But there, something gets under my skin when I don't like a character.
I hear you.
I don't know what it is.
Well, because, like, they're driving the story. Like, regardless of what, if it's plot-driven or whatever, character drives story because we're learning whatever it is through character. So I think, and I think there's a difference between an unlikable character and not liking a character.
Yeah.
Because there are, there's a book called Fates and Furies by Lauren Graff, which I will go to my grave to say is the best book ever written. And the characters are unlikable. Like, they're complicated and messy and unlikable, but they are a thrill to read. And I did not like them. They were driven by their flaws. And the book that I'm not mentioning that I think is your pick later were characters that were unlikable and hard to read because I also just didn't like them.
Yeah.
It's a weird, like, none of this is real. Like, we're speaking nonsense, but, like, if you're a reader, you know what we're talking about.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. Like, readers get it. I mean, we took a short weekend trip last week, and I had been so behind.
You mean last week, 6 months ago, whenever this airs?
Exactly. When this airs, it'll have been, you know, who knows, a different lifetime and a different person. But I posted on my Instagram story. I had intended to go to the bookstore. I did not make it. You and I were like, great, go to the bookstore at the airport. And I made some kind of joke about how the only choices were going to be like Oprah's book club.
Yep.
But fine. Yeah, I'm going to do it. I don't know what Oprah's up to, but we're going to find out. And then I got to the airport and the bookstore was closed.
All of this works. Checks out.
So of course it was.
Yeah.
But it was so funny because I don't know if I got a chance to tell you this. Book people were feeling me. I got the most DMs on a post I have ever gotten in my entire life. Our listeners and friends were so upset on my behalf and just absolutely crushed. It was amazing. And so I feel like book people get this.
I agree. I think that like these nuances do exist. Like it's when you like close readers know that there is a difference. Like you can love to read an unlikable character and that is different than not liking a character.
Yeah, for sure. Back in my elaboratus, I remember like reading all these studies about how reading increases empathy. And it's like one of the things you hear over and over from like parenting people too. And we process our feelings about book characters in the same way that we process our feelings about our friends. it happens in the same part of the brain, which is wild to me.
Wow.
Yeah, like, first of all, sidebar, scientists, how do you even do this?
How do you even begin to think about this?
Right? Who proposes this?
And thank you for sharing it.
Right. But it's amazing to me that for our brains, when we are reading, we process the feelings about the characters as if they were real people in the same part of our brain. And I think that when a character comes up again and again, for me, you know, it's like it's an empathy factor. Either I feel maybe like people aren't being empathetic enough to them, or maybe I should be more empathetic. I mean, that's where it drives me crazy if I don't like them. I'm like, what am I not getting about them? Like, clearly there's an aspect of them that I don't understand. Can't just be that they're a shitty person.
You're like, so what if they're bisexual and then in Hollywood? I was like, wow, Jill.
Today's episode is Characters We Can't Quit, and we are going to take a deep dive into these characters and talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between. I'm fully prepared to overanalyze our feelings. I want to go full armchair therapist on all of our choices.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. Get ready. I won't even charge you for this hour.
Your 50-minute hour?
Exactly.
Amazing.
I know. I'm excited. Do you want to go first?
So I have three total and then two runners up because I just like...
I love that.
Not. Yeah. And my first one is a classic that I didn't read until I was in college and a series of books. And it's called The Chronicles of Prydain by Lord Alexander.
Mm.
And The Chronicles of Prydain is a collection of four books. The Book of Three, The Black Cauldron, Castle of Lear, Taran Wanderer, and... The High King. And I think the Black Cauldron won the Newbery Honor and the High King won the Newbery Medal. So these are like beloved fantasy books from the 1960s and they're middle grade technically. And something that I loved about these books was that I didn't anticipate liking them at all. I was reading them for a independent study with a professor in college and a couple of friends. And we super judged the book by its cover. It just looked like you're kind of...
Can I just tell you, in my mind, I did not want to interrupt.
Yeah.
And now I have. I was saving in my head, like, have you seen these books recently? Like, the last time I saw them, which was probably 3 years ago, they continued to have a terrible cover.
They are, and they're the same terrible covers. No one's updating them.
Ooh.
And so when I loved this professor. I learned so much from her. She was so... has had a profound impact on my life. When we ordered the books for class, they all came in and I just was looking at it like, this is the book that
like, she I don't want to read this. Like, yeah.
And I remember texting Lily like, I'm nervous. Like, this looks stupid. And reading it and immediately being like, immediately okay with having been wrong because it's just beautifully written. I love the main character. I love all of the characters. And just a really quick version of what it's about. The Chronicles of Prydain, like I said, is a collection of five books that takes place in the fake land of Prydain, which is run by the High King. And the High King controls a few other small kingdoms. And Taran is the main character. And he is a really young farm boy who like really desperately wants to live like a heroic life. But he doesn't have like a lineage and doesn't know where he comes from. And, is then relegated to being the assistant pig keeper for this oracular pig who is like, has the gift of clairvoyance, which is like silly. And through trying to take care of this pig, does Taran find himself in various adventures, which ultimately is him trying to save Prydain from evil and other threats. And through the books, he gets older. I think he's only like supposed to be 18 when he's... by the end of the series. And it's very Welsh inspired, amazing characters that he meets. The bard is particularly funny. And Lord Alexander writes so beautifully about like nature and love and friendship and loss and grief. And I was just in like the worst place when I started to read these books. And Taran, as the main character, really spoke to me immediately because he was like very knee-jerk and wanted to be more than what he was capable of and didn't have the patience to ultimately become capable of the things he wanted. But his growth is so realistic and he becomes such a leader. But by the fourth book, which is Terran Wanderer, it's completely about Terran, and it goes off of like what the main storyline is for the four books. And yeah. He goes to try and find where did he come from. Because he doesn't know his lineage. He is just Terran of Caer Dalvin, which is like the place where he happened to grow up. And then he's known as like Terran Wanderer because he's just wandering through life and he doesn't know where he comes from. And it is really just like a search for self. From my perspective, it read very much like an allegory for someone's coming out experience. And I was so moved by it, and that this was for young people, very young people, to read. And that he ultimately is comfortable with the idea that he comes from quote unquote nowhere, because he is himself and he's very proud of that. And I was very emotional reading these books and finishing these books. And they are books that like I have so many different editions and copies of that I just like reread every once in a while, because I just love to be in his Lord Alexander's world and in his language. And Terran has just left a mark on my heart that will never leave, to the point where I named my dog after the main character. But yeah, he is just like a character that I just love so profoundly and has like changed my life, going from like my early 20s into my 30s, just like was very important and made a huge impression on me.
I have only read, is it The High King that has the black cover with the silver on it?
The High King's the very last book.
Hold on. I'm Googling.
Okay.
Googling, listeners. So it's the book Black Cauldron that I have read.
Yes. Most people have only read that one.
And it was quite a while ago. Like, yeah. I feel like I read it maybe in grad school. Is it that old?
It's from 1964 or 5.
Yeah. And I remember liking it, but I feel like now I want to revisit it.
Yeah.
Like, I love hearing the way that you're talking about it. I don't think I connected with it in that way at the time.
Well, and something too that I loved about it is that the series was not structured for the fourth book to even, or the third book to, oh, there's five books. I keep saying there's four books. I went to Silver Learning Center for math until I graduated high school.
Is this an advertisement for or against their services?
For. They helped me a lot. I should still be going. The fourth book, Terran Wanderer, wasn't even supposed to exist. His editor was like, I feel like something's missing.
Oh.
And he was like, okay, all right, Terran Wanderer. And it was just like, I can't imagine the series without it. And I highly recommend rereading or reading the series from start to finish. A lot of people have only read Black Cauldron, notably because it's the most famous. It's a Disney movie that is terrible. And I also thought it was the first in the series. But then I learned the Book of Three is first, and then the Black Cauldron. And the Black Cauldron, the Book of Three is good, but the Black Cauldron is incredible. Yeah, I'd be into you reading them or reading them with your kids.
Yeah, that was the other thing I was thinking is just wondering whether Pippa would read them with me. So I looked up the publisher. It's Squarefish. They're an imprint of Macmillan. How do we get them to make new covers?
Better covers? I don't know, because like Disney bought
Macmillan.
Yeah, Macmillan, Mac, come on. I think Disney was trying to do a live action movie series like maybe 5 or 6 years ago that never panned out. So if they had, maybe they would have. But I think, honestly, the interest just isn't there right now. No one is reading these books. And I would love for them to have a second life.
That would be really good.
Yeah. But anyway. Yeah.
They desperately need new covers. But yeah.
They desperately need new covers.
I definitely want to revisit this now. Because I feel like I didn't. At the time I read them, I don't know that I had a life experience that made me hook into it that way, but now I do. And
well, you know what? I haven't read a lot of fantasy, and sometimes I think fantasy does one thing particularly well, whatever that thing is. If it's world building, they do it really well. If it's character, it does it really well. I happen to believe that Lord Alexander does all of it really well in The Chronicles of Prydain. Like, the world feels really real. The characters feel really real. The writing is just stunning. I would imagine this would be relatively difficult for a middle grade reader to read. And I would love your thoughts on them.
I'm going to read it.
Okay, great. Why don't you share with me one of your first characters?
My first pick is like for three picks simultaneously.
Okay, perfect.
I picked the March sisters from Louisa Alcott's Little Women.
Absolutely, yes.
Because I have said this a million times, but I wanted to talk to you about it a little bit more in depth because you have been the kindest person about listening to my rant about it.
I love hearing you talk about these characters because you clearly love them.
This is like top book of not, I can't pick one, but this is up there for me as a book I reread. I first read it in middle school and have read it so many times. And it is very interesting because as I grow and change and become a different person, the things
so does your reading of it?
Yeah, so does my reading of it. And it holds up. It's so good. If you read this in high school or college or whenever, and you haven't read it in a decade or so, oh my gosh, go and get it.
Mm.
But I've said this a million times, Amy March gets an undeserved bad rap. And we always view Jo as the feminist and as the heroine, and she's autonomous and she questions societal standards and, you know, does she even need to find a husband? And she cuts her hair and she breaks stereotype gender norms. And I, not only do we tend to view her as the one and only heroine of Little Women, but also as this only feminist.
Exactly.
And over time, I have just really changed my mind about this. Mm-hmm. And I think that Alcott has given us portraits of many types of women, and she shows them all making their life choices.
Mm-hmm.
Like Meg is really clear from the start, like she wants a domestic life. And Jo is like so crushed by this, you know, and she's like, but you could be a famous actress. And it's Meg who calls her on that and is like, hey, just because our dreams are different doesn't mean mine is garbage.
Yeah.
You know, it's the person who's going to be the stay-at-home mom, basically, who reminds her that, you know, women can be lots of things.
Yes.
And I don't know. This is the other thing is I think we all think that we're the Joes of our life.
We like to think we are.
In this one way, I think we are.
Yeah.
Because we all have like one idea of what being something is sometimes. And that's not always the case. I don't know. It just bugs me. And then, you know, absolutely. There's Amy. As everyone says, everyone wants to think themselves a Jo. I am here to tell you that I am an Amy and I'm not ashamed of it in any way.
Yes.
At the start of the book, she is just portrayed as like immature and bratty.
Mm.
She's 12.
Yeah, so was I.
I've got two 13-year-olds, and I am here to tell you that being obsessed with what your nose looks like or what other people think is pretty much the sole occupation of being that age.
And spoiler alert, like it kind of doesn't go away. It just evolves into looking like something else.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we vilify her for burning Jo's manuscript.
Which was
and
awful.
No doubt. That is terrible. I'm not like there's no going back from that. But do you want to be judged based on
the
worst thing you did as a child?
No. Because it keeps me up at night sometimes.
And we just cast aside her remorse. You know, I do think, you know, that is presented as the moment that defines who Amy is in the book. Mm-hmm. And I agree, that's a defining moment for her. But it's not solidifying her character as being cold and unloving. It's what opens her eyes to evolving as a person and growing. I don't know.
I totally agree. I'm about to say almost the exact same words I said. And from a season one episode, I totally agree, having not read the book. I've only seen
always forget you haven't read this. We have got to read each other's books.
Well, this is my work in season three. We're going to do another adaptations episode, and this will be on, this is on my list. Like, I have got to read Little Women.
I can't. Yeah. If you don't like it, we can't even talk about it because I will, like, you won't be able to resuscitate me.
I can't fathom that happening because I am literally obsessed with the both adaptations.
I love it. But we need to like read it together.
I would love that. I would love that. I would love that. I agree though, because I think that like we fancy ourselves the best version of ourselves and pretend that we've always been that version of ourselves.
Right. But
the reality is that we've been shitty at some point to someone, and admitting that doesn't make us weaker. Pretending that we didn't do it doesn't make us stronger. So Amy did something stupid when she was a kid and is clearly the impetus for change. She becomes a better person from that point. And I think that, and not even, but she doesn't become like a different person. She still feels like her. Like, she's still like really strong and seeming like independent in a way that is kind of clever.
Yeah.
While also like not being that person anymore. Like, she evolves into a person that she was always going to become. And part of that is because of what she did. And I think it's important. That's character development.
Yeah. And I think that's the clever is the perfect word for it. I don't think it's that she's shallow. No. I think it's that she's clever. You know, she famously declares that she will marry well. I mean, even Laurie teases her about it when they meet in Europe. And she calls it like it is. She has limited economic opportunities and choices. And she is going to make the one that best suits her. And I just love that. She sees marriage as a partnership in which over the course of your life, like, so many things can happen, and it's what you make of it. And it doesn't have to be like Meg's version, which is like complete adoration. And it doesn't need to be Joe's version where you have to be challenged all the time by like a fiery equal. She is practical about it. She knows her money will always be her husband's money. Their children will always be his children. Mm-hmm. And given what the limits are for women in the 1800s, this is what she can do for herself and by extension, her family. Mm-hmm. And where Joe rebels, I think Amy calculates. Oh. And they're both imperfect. I don't know. Like, it just manifests itself really quietly and in a different way. And I hate that we vilify one and glorify the other because I think they're both amazing.
And I think it is doing the opposite of what the book wants, or the story wants. And I think that we talk about this all the time in my book club. I just bit my tongue and I'm trying to work through it. We talk about this all of the time in our book club is when we read a book that is older and maybe a classic, we have to be careful not to read it with too much of a 21st century lens, because then we're unkind to the things that were very progressive at the time that it was written. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of the criticism is unfair because, like, maybe it would be different now. Like, maybe her response would be different, or our response to it would be different if this were written today. But the reality was, this was written about women in the 1800s in relatively the same time. I think Amy's very feminist. And I think that, to your point, it highlights how feminism truly is just about allowing women their choices, regardless of what they are.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been rolling it around in my head, too, as we've, like, seen, you know, more adaptations of Sense and Sensibility. And I've been on this kick. I've been rewatching Downton Abbey.
We keep almost doing it.
It's good. I'm actually, there were so many things I forgot.
We, listen, it isn't for a lack of want. It's like, we just did it. Should we do it again?
Yes. Yeah. And Bridgerton, I feel like I have gone into this like full-fledged Regency period, apparently.
I support this message.
But it's just so interesting because across the board, you encounter characters, the female characters in all of these stories, facing kind of the same situation of here's my three choices. What can I do for myself? But also in so many of them, what can I do for my family?
Oh boy. Yeah. This was such a good pick.
Mm. I was like, this is long. Like, I typed up a whole page of notes about this. And I was like, okay, it's not fair to say this is one pick. This is like three picks. But, oh gosh. And I smacked my microphone. Sorry, Maddie.
You're feeling passionate.
It's three picks and I can't be stopped and I can't control my hands. What do you have first, Michael?
Okay, so my next one is one that is a little bit newer. It came out, I think it came out in 2019 or 2018. I read it in 2019, so maybe it came out in 2018. And it is a book that is very character driven and that I frankly cannot get these characters and their experiences out of my brain. And I don't know if I ever will. And it's a book we've talked about. I don't think you've read it, though. It's An American Marriage by Tayari Jones.
I want to read this book.
Oh boy. It's one of those books where it's heavy and it should be heavy, yet somehow very easy to read. And I say that to its benefit. The way Tayari Jones wrote it, you fly through it and it's complicated and there's no right or wrong response necessarily. Just to give a brief synopsis, it follows newlyweds Celestial and Roy, and they're sort of like living in this middle place of sort of the American dream and the New South, capital N, capital S. Roy is young and he's an executive. Celestial is an artist and has like a budding career ahead of her. They're starting to settle into their routine. And what happens is that Roy is arrested for rape that he didn't commit. And he is a black man who was profiled because he's a black man. And he was sent to prison for a certain amount of time, but he served 5 years. And the next part of the book is him in prison for 5 years and how they are newlyweds. I mean, they are barely married when he gets sent to prison. And then he is missing her and has all of these experiences in prison while she is kind of trying to be there for him while she can't really be.
Yeah.
And by the time he is released, she is with someone else, wants a divorce, and he cannot come to terms with that.
Oh.
And so what you are given as a reader is that these two people have been put in an impossible situation where their responses to it aren't right or wrong, because I don't know what I would do. I don't know how I would react, and I can't even pretend to like start to put myself in that position because I am not a person of color. And it's so character driven, like it's truly their story. People come in and out of it around that, like her family is in a lot of it. It's just something that I can't let go of because of my complicated feelings about them. Like, at some points, I'm really mad at Celestial. And I'm just like, you could have just stayed with him and been faithful. Like, he went to prison for this thing he didn't do. And then you get her perspective and you're like, wow, this was really hard for her. And she was asked to do something that, like, she didn't sign up for either. And then Roy really, really, really reacts in, like, a really intense way that you know is bad. Like, he crosses a line near the end. And it's kind of what we're saying in the beginning is that, like, they're not unlikable characters, but they're very complicated. And and my feelings around them are complicated. And it's something that, like, I think about every once in a while having read this book, because I tend to read without thinking about how I'm feeling. And then once I finish, I know how I felt. And this was a situation where, like, I actively was not sure how I felt. Other than, like, loving the book, I was just like, I don't know what I think is the right thing here. And I don't know who did the right thing, but I can't get, it's so to the point where, like, I am desperate to ask these people, like, how they felt, and they aren't real. And, I want to check in with them and be like, how are you doing? Like, that was a wild time in your life that isn't real. But yeah, I actually think you would, it's a book that is not easy to recommend because it sounds so intense, but, like, once you recommend it, I think anyone could love this book and learn something from it. And the characters and, like, what other people go through despite your own circumstances.
I mean, while this one example sounds so wild, you know, like one partner is accused of you know, rape and goes to prison. And you're like, that doesn't happen. But it does.
It does, especially to Black men.
It does. And also, similar things do happen. I mean, you know, like we have friends that have been married for, you know, they weren't newlyweds, but I mean, you know, a few years, not a ton. And one of them ended up needing to go to rehab. And you think like, oh my gosh, like, yeah. And, you know, when they were telling us about it, I'm like, well, yeah, gosh, you know, what can we do to support you while your partner is in rehab? And when it is someone you know, it really drives home, like, not only is it hard for the person experiencing being in jail, going to rehab, whatever it is, but their partner loves them. Agreed to stick it out with them through thick and thin. And yet when you make those commitments, never in your wildest dreams do you foresee something like this being the thing that you face.
And just the reality of it is so different than your promise.
Oh, now I have to read it.
I think you would... It's weird to say I think you would love it.
I think you would love it.
I think you'd appreciate it in the same way that I do.
Yeah.
And I'm just really, I really want to talk to you about it. Like, I'm curious about your thoughts.
Yes. I'm definitely, that might have to be my next one. I feel like that's kind of the zone that I'm in right now. Okay. I just finished a book that is completely different from that. It's We Are the Brennans, and it's by Tracy Lang, and just came out in April. We are in April. First of all, it just came out in August, but we are recording so far ahead, it's not new anymore.
It came out last year.
One of the things that I connected to this book about, and a couple of the other books that I have read this year, like Malibu Rising and a couple others, was this interesting exploration of what we owe to other people in our family.
Wow.
You know, like, what does your love and your familial relationship, what do you owe to other people?
Yes.
And while it's easy to say, oh, you know, anybody, anything, get real. nobody can actually execute that.
Right. Yes. That's a great point.
And so I just think that's, you know, what does she owe her husband? What does he owe her? And beyond that, like, how do they, and then how do they feel about that?
And how, and it's just, to your point at the beginning of this episode about empathy, it really flexes your empathetic muscle because you're like, like, how could you possibly expect, like, what can you, like, you've had two such very drastically different experiences in the last 5 years. How do you hold someone to that? It's an incredible book. It was an Oprah Book Club pick. I think it was longlisted for some award.
But yeah, I remember it always being I remember seeing it a ton at the bookstore and just loving the cover. And now I definitely need to get into it.
Oh, perfect. Do you have one more for me or two more?
I definitely have one more for you. Okay. And if this is not the book that we've been talking around the whole time, then I have two more for you.
Okay.
Were you thinking of Little Fires Everywhere?
Oh, damn it. No.
Really? What were you thinking about?
Normal People.
Okay. Let me talk about this, and then we'll talk about that. And that's not even the second choice book I thought you were going to name.
Well, what was your second choice book?
A book, if it wasn't Little Fires Everywhere, I thought you were talking about Red at the Bone.
Oh, well, I actually almost put that one on here because, well, never mind. I actually, like, always forget about those characters, but I don't want to roast who is my, like, one of my favorite authors.
I can't remember her name now, the main character in that book, but she got under my skin and annoyed me for weeks
on
end before I decided to let her off the hook, and it's all good. I've processed my feelings about her now, and we're good.
Okay, good. I'm really happy for you. But this is a great pick.
I picked Little Fires Everywhere. in part because we've discussed this a bunch because we have different feelings about it.
Yeah.
Which I love. And also on, I've been getting caught up on episodes recently, and I love, you and I are hilarious when we disagree about something, because if it's like a low stakes thing and like, it's not a big deal, it's totally fine. But if one or other of us do not like something that the other one has expressed a strong association with, we cannot apologize and make space for the other person's feelings enough.
No, absolutely.
I love that about us.
Me too. It's like too safe of a space.
But it's hilarious because we've apologized to one another about this book about 6 times now on this show.
We're going to rename this podcast as I'm Sorry About Little Fires Everywhere.
I'm Sorry About Little Fires Everywhere. I've brought it up again and I'm sorry.
No, let it go.
And because I can't stop myself, you know, I know we don't agree and I really value your opinion. Here's why I bring it up today. Both Elena and Mia are characters that I can't quit, as evidenced by our continuing to discuss them over and over and over again on this podcast.
Yes, of course.
For the longest time, I really couldn't piece together what it was. I mean, I think they're both problematic.
Sure.
And I think it's easy to kind of cast them as good and bad. And I think that does them both a disservice.
Yeah.
And even just saying they're both kind of complicated really lets them both off the hook for things that are crappy. And I think that's why they stick with me.
Absolutely.
And for Elena, it kind of started out, I don't know, I was discussing this over DMs with my friend Kate. Hello, Kate. I love it. Kate will listen to an episode from so long ago and then text Michael and I as if we're living it in real time.
Yeah. We will get a text about this sometime next winter.
Yes. And it'll be amazing and I will love it.
Well, we'll be like, okay, please refresh my memory. What are we talking
about? I know, it takes me a second. I'm like, wait, what did I say? Okay, now I'm there. Yes! Sidebar. Okay. So I was talking with Kate, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed like the two of you kind of saw Elena more in a villain role than I did. I think I was much more sympathetic to her.
I can't really remember, honestly.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And so it was sort of the vibe I got was sort of like, why should I feel bad for you? Like, look at your life. Like, why would I feel bad for you? I had a lot of empathy with her for some reason. And, you know, she started from what she thought was a good place. Now, it was not a good place.
Sure.
Obviously. But she thought it was a good place. And she clearly loves her kids. But her inability to accept them as they are.
Yeah.
And to accept their interests and their dreams. Again, that's just like one small aspect of what makes her problematic.
Sure.
But I also think that makes her relatable.
Yeah.
But she just gets so totally wrapped up in this mystery and the challenge of parenting teens. And God, that's hard.
Yeah.
And she just takes it way too far.
Yeah.
For me, there was just something highly relatable in that for me, of like, not to the point where my house ends up burned down, but spoiler alert.
By one of your children.
Right. But I feel like we've all had a moment in our lives where we look back at it later and we're like, why didn't I just let that go?
Of course.
Like, why was I so tenacious? Like,
yeah.
Let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy to see that in Elena. And I have definitely had moments in my life where I felt like that.
Yes.
But then I also think when you start thinking about Mia, it's the other side of the same coin.
Yeah.
She also does not let things go.
Sure.
And she set up this life that is not working for her daughter. And in the same way, she loves her, but isn't hearing her. I just think there are so many aspects of it. You know, you've got a mother-daughter thing, which is always mm-hmm. mother-daughter is always a thing and interesting to explore. And then you've got complicated characters who strike me neither as good or bad.
Right.
They're complicated in more than one way, which also like really rings true for me.
Yeah.
And also for Mia, she has made decisions in her past, which I think she's not entirely comfortable with.
Definitely. She's running from them.
Yes. You know, she can talk a big game about living this free-spirited life, but she's really running from her decision mm-hmm. to flee. You know, regret is always an interesting thing mm-hmm. to unpack. And I just think you throw all these things together. And for me, the characters were very relatable and complex. Yes. And the things that they faced, I don't know. I just identified them not in parallel, but just kind of tangentially. And they have stuck with me. And I have continued to bring them up and bother you with it at every turn.
That's the second time you've used the word tangentially on this podcast, and I love it. I never find – the first time you used it, I was like, God, I got to find a reason to use that in my life, and I haven't been able to yet, so I'm glad you were able to.
I love that.
No, I think you're honestly like spot – my issues with the book truly mostly came down to the fact that I felt like there wasn't enough of this. Like, it was all set up for an unbelievable amount of character analysis, and I really loved the first half of the book. Mostly because it really was just like diving into how complicated these people were. Not just, I think the entire book is filled with unforgettable characters who are complicated in more than one way. For me, it was like at some point it felt like the book was doing a disservice to the characters by asking me to believe this like really outlandish
set of coincidences. Yes, yeah, like, that's true.
And so I think that like that disappointed me about the book. So I was just like, I was getting what I wanted from the first half. And then the second half was like, no, her painting would not be in the Cleveland Art Museum where she happens to be living because she's on the run. Like, no, Celeste, I love you and I love your writing. And you are so good at character. That's what she does really well in her first book. I think you would really like to read Everything I Never Told You. Because she does this so well, like complicated characters where you're like, I don't support the choices you are making, but like, I understand why you're making them. I just wanted more of that. But I think you're totally right.
I love that. This is so interesting when you talk about characters. Yeah. So for me in this book, the characters were so compelling that I didn't care about the plot.
Yes, that's fair.
Because everything you've said about the plot is 1,000% true.
Okay, by the way, we're doing it again. Like we're
we
like,
are.
No, you're right.
You're right. You're so right. I love
it. We can both be right.
We are deeply uncomfortable with disagreeing with one another somehow, and yet not. I don't know.
Well, it doesn't happen very often. And I think it doesn't. That, like, but I do truly, very deeply believe that that is the truth about this book is that the best parts are what she did with character because they do live in my mind as real people too.
Yes, I definitely agree. And I don't know, we need to go to Cleveland and check out the art museum.
Yeah, and just to make sure is it there?
Who knows? I mean, and are any of their artists on the run?
Yes, and then let's like spiral and then ruin someone's life because of it.
We could really make a docent have like the worst day ever.
Yes. Oh, I've absolutely.
I feel like, look, these people came in. That was the book I thought you were alluding to, but the book you actually almost
was alluding to
was Normal People. Say more.
Well, I also want to say too about Little Fires Everywhere is that like, I felt very strongly that the plot wasn't what it could be. That is overriding the fact that's making it sound like I hated the book. I was very intentional by saying like, I didn't hate the book. It's actually a very good book. It just could have been better. That is also how I feel about Normal People. Like, I think it was a good book and I don't think it was a great book. And I have a lot of issues with it, but something that continues, I just keep thinking about these characters for better or worse. Like, yeah. I think for kind of the things that we're saying, like, they felt very real to me. They, also, this isn't a pick, but this is what I thought we were talking about.
Yeah.
They felt very real to me. They kind of, in the same way that we were talking about before, like, they are so desperately trying not to be defined by the mistakes they made as children. And that is sort of, like, the thread for me of like, what they try to do in the future when they just simply can't, they can't forgive each other or themselves for what happened as in adolescence. And that is really interesting to me. And we talked about it in our adaptations episode. So it was doubly interesting because how they were, I think the adaptation was amazing. And I also think it honored the book well.
Yeah.
But it also, but the character, and the characters felt like the characters I read, but with an added level of empathy. Like what we're talking about, I think the book lacked a lot of empathy. And
for sure.
And the adaptation added that. Like, ooh. I didn't support and understand a lot of what they did, but like, from like a perspective of like, I wouldn't have done that, but I know why you did it. And I know that like being 16 sucks. And I know that trying to be a different more of who you actually are going into your 20s is hard to validate to people who knew you when you were younger. And that I found to be really profound. And I can't stop thinking about them in terms of like, in that's this sort of a dual world that the book lives in, which is a book and a series.
Yeah.
So I thought we were talking about that because we also had very complicated feelings about that one too.
We did. And it's interesting to hear your take on it now that it's been a while too, because you know, mm-hmm. I roll these things around. We agree that they both find themselves in a place where they cannot forgive themselves or one another for what happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I did not particularly see them as having growth and wanting to change anything about that.
Mm-hmm. I think
for
that's fair.
For me, it just kind of felt like new location, same people.
Same problem.
Same situation.
You know what? I think you are a little bit right. I think it's part of their problem.
That, for me, that was where I was like, what is the point of this?
Yeah.
And so I think that's why we saw it differently.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
They didn't click for me. But I think that's why.
Something else that I think about all the time with that episode is when you were like, it's always talked about how they're these like brilliant people. They never have one smart conversation. And I was like, you're right. Like they're kind of boring. Like they're just boring people. That's what the title should be called. Boring People by Sally Rooney.
Boring People. I know. And again, she's got a book out in this fall, which will be in the past.
Yeah.
And it's everywhere.
Yeah.
On social media and at the bookstores, and it makes you want to pick it up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Jill, no.
I have it.
You should not read this. This is not going to be what you want it to be.
Yes, I remember you saying like I kind of want to read it, and I was like, Jill, don't read this.
Oh.
I have it from the library. I'll let you know what I think.
Yeah. I am eager to hear that.
Okay, so I have this last pick, and it's a book that Jill and I have both read, and I won't talk too much about, like, what it's about, because if you want to know, just, like, listen to the rest of our podcast. If you're not a fan, like, what are you doing here? But season three, I don't give a shit what I say. But it's Les by Andrew Sean Greer, and the character, who I can't get out of my head, is Les.
Yeah.
I think it's for a lot of different reasons. One, it's in how the book was written, because by the end of the book, you have this idea of who Les is, and it's so totally through the lens of another character.
Mm-hmm.
And that just does something to you. It actually like made me feel even more love for him, because this person clearly loves Les profoundly. And like we know that. Because, spoiler alert, like the last paragraph, you find out who the narrator is, and it's also done very subtly. And so to have an entire book about a character that you then find out is told technically in first person, but just that person talking about another person, that is a deep love for a character.
I mean, can you imagine reading a book about yourself just written by a person who adores you?
Yes, exactly. And like sees you.
I'm so glad you picked this. Yes.
Like, So that's one reason, because like the reading experience made me realize like Les is a lovable character. And yes. Another was truly just because it was a perspective that I hadn't quite read before in a tone that was totally unique. And I loved reading about a gay person in middle age where it's not horrible and it's not also always amazing. It felt very realistic. His experiences are very fictional. Like the situation feels very plotty, but the way it's done is like totally out of self-preservation. Like it's character-driven plot. And so I think at for the whole time, I kind of don't care what happens in the sense of like, all I care about is what happens to him and his happiness. Mm-hmm. And I really, this is a book that recently, a listener of ours, is also a friend of mine, Alex. Hi, Alex. She texted me and said, I have been in such a reading funk. I didn't get through anything in September. And I was just listening to an episode where you and Jill were talking about Les. And I just thought this might be the right book for right now. And she was like, I am loving it. I'm so close to being done. And it is a balm. It is the perfect book for any season.
So many things.
Yes.
I'm so glad. I did not think of including that book, but I'm so glad that you did, because you're so right. And it's interesting because in the beginning, I liked Les from the start, but yeah. I thought I kind of loved him because I have the soft spot for like crotchety, grumpy old men, like crack me up for some reason. So like I was feeling that. But by the end, you genuinely love him.
Yes.
And want amazing things. And so you're like, are you accidentally at a religious monastery and the what? Right. Okay, that's fine. None of it matters because comes across as so genuine and authentic.
Yes.
And he kind of just bubbles around in your brain because his situation is relatable. I think we've all had broken hearts. I think so many of us, especially when you reach a certain age, you know, you're like, what am I going to do when I grow up? Like, what am I doing in a professional capacity?
Yeah.
There are so many aspects of him that are so relatable, and he's so likable. You just want to cheer for him.
Oh my gosh, he's so likable. And I just liked that. I think that a lot of fiction or storytelling leans into like people's like deepest fears and anxieties in ways that like validates them. And so putting them in positions that make them feel really unsafe and insecure and anxious. And what I liked about Les was that he was being brave, like personally brave, and in sort of a slapsticky way, it would seem like it was not going, like he made a mistake and his anxiety made him believe like this is gonna be really bad. But then it was just impossible for him to believe that like these people actually wanted him in these places for his work. And so what I liked about it was dispelling his anxieties. It was telling him like, you don't have to be anxious about this. Like people love you. And I thought that it was a really optimistic way to talk about, because I think like we live in a time where we like so deeply want to validate when people are anxious about something. Mm-hmm. And that is good. And I'm really glad about that. But I also think it's important to be like, your anxiety isn't the same thing as what's true. Like you can be anxious about this thing and then experience something that tells you that your anxiety was wrong. And that's a good thing. And I loved that. And I loved that it wasn't from a character who's like 20 years old. And I know 20-year-olds go through some shit, but I like want to know that when I'm in my like late 40s, early 50s, that like I can still work through these things. And I don't have to feel like I've missed my time.
I love everything about that analysis. I just co-signed the whole paragraph.
Thanks. But yeah, I love that book and love that character.
I do too. He's like that friend that you're like, man, you got kicked in the face. I really just want good things for you.
Yes. That happened to me once. I was the first ever baseball practice in second grade. It was raining, so we had to have baseball practice in the gym. We walked in, my dad's talking to another dad, and then someone seems, watch out! And a baseball smacked me in the face from across the gym, and it hurt like hell. I mean, it hurt like hell. And my dad was like, are you okay? And the whole time in my brain, I'm like, just don't cry. Just don't cry. It's the first day of baseball. You don't want to be here. You're trying to make your dad happy. And don't cry. And I didn't. And then years later, my dad, it came up. And I was like, do you remember that? And my dad was like, yes, I remember that. And I couldn't believe you weren't crying. I was like, oh, I wanted to badly.
Sidebar.
Oh, that wasn't a sidebar?
Sidebar from the sidebar. This is the second time that you've told me this story.
Okay, great.
But here's what I love about it. First of all, it cracked me up an equal amount. But second of all, the first time you told me the story, you left out the part about how you were inside of a gym.
Oh, yeah.
You were playing baseball inside a gym.
Yeah, like, this wasn't going to go well.
In the past, I'm picturing you like, I'm throwing my hair back. You're in the field.
Absolutely.
You're in the great outdoors. And you're like participating in baseball. And a ball comes that maybe you should have been paying attention to and smacks you in the face. And this is like, I was in a gym. There was a lot happening.
Yes.
This is a completely different story. And it's the same story.
Well, I'm happy to be a story repeater.
I enjoyed this additional detail on the story.
There are two stories that I tell, like, and always will, over and over again.
I should say, unless you've been hit in the face with a baseball twice, and I am confusing the two instances.
Just the one. Just so far. I tell that story all the time, and the story about how I got hit by a car while I was mourning the death of Aaliyah. Like, I eat out on those.
But I enjoy that other one too.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It's a good one.
It's a lot. R.I.P. Aaliyah, I love you. Listen, this was so delightful. Like, it really truly, was. Let's be characters we can't quit in our own lives.
I agree.
Listener, you too. We will maybe have these on our bookshop. We haven't updated our bookshop in a while. Bear with us. But if you are interested in any of the books that we've talked about on Book It, we have a bookshop. It's bookshop.org/shop/BookItPod. Find us on Instagram and Twitter and TikTok at BookItPod. And learn more information about us at our website at BookItPod.com.
See ya.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
Book It is available across podcast platforms.
Subscribe to never miss an episode, and don't forget to leave a review before you go.
We'd love to stay in touch. You can find us online at bookitpod.com or on Instagram and Twitter at bookitpod.
Want to read something you heard on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod.
Book It was created by hosts Jill Burkett-Ragacy and Michael Woodson, with sound design and production by Madeline Call at Honeysuckler.